Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality. That's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, the 1175th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't, or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. All right, well, welcome back. We still have a show. You are still listening. The world is still turning. And as far as we know, the eclipse is not a portent of doom. But hey, there's still a lot of game left to play. But today, let's return to Earth, get a good solid footing here on this terrain, and just continue to march on forward. Let's start out with the current state of the Get Trump effort. As many of us predicted a year ago when all of these indictments began, Donald Trump is well on his way to becoming America's Nelson Mandela, minus, of course, the communism. And Donald Trump is fully embracing that role. On Saturday evening, Donald Trump hosted a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago, raising $50.5 million, reportedly blowing out the totals, nearly doubling the totals, from the Biden fundraiser at Radio City Music Hall in New York with Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Lizzo and Stephen Colbert just a few days prior, which was, at the time, the record fundraising evening for a presidential candidate Donald Trump waited a few days and then blew those numbers absolutely out of the water, and he did it without the ostentatious display. Before that event, Donald Trump released a series of posts on Truth Social addressing the gag order applied by Judge Juan Merchan in the Alvin Bragg Stormy Daniels fake indictment in New York City, set to begin next week. Here is the statement from Trump. Let's go through all three posts. Crooked Judge Juan Merchan is not allowing me to talk, is taking away my First Amendment rights. He's got me gagged because he doesn't want the facts behind the gag to come out. How many corrupt, biased, crooked Joe Biden, quote unquote, protection agency, New York judges do I have to endure before somebody steps in? I had New York federal judge Lewis Kaplan with a woman who I never knew and had nothing to do with until she sued me for quote unquote defamation. She did not know what day, month, or year the supposed quote unquote incident took place. She knew nothing. Kaplan, a Hillary friend, wouldn't even let my lawyers put on a proper case, made it two cases instead of one, took away my American right to defend myself, and was a crazed bully as his wife and friends sat in the courthouse every day in their little roped-off section and prodded him on in awe. This mysterious lady who said rape is sexy got $91 million. Then, of course, we have Arthur Engoron, a total lunatic whack job who ruled that I should pay an almost $500 million quote-unquote fine for having done nothing wrong. No victims, no damages, ironclad disclaimer, only success. In fact, he was the one who committed fraud when he purposely, at the direction of racist, corrupt Attorney General Letitia James, undervalued Mar-a-Lago at $18 million. Now we have Merchan, who is not allowing me to talk, thereby violating the law and the Constitution all at once. It is so bad what he is trying to get away with. How was he even chosen for this case? I heard he fought like hell to get it, and all of the rest of them also. If this partisan hack wants to put me in the quote-unquote clink for speaking the open and obvious truth, I will gladly become a modern-day Nelson Mandela. It will be my great honor. We have to save our country from these political operatives masquerading as prosecutors and judges, and I am willing to sacrifice my freedom for that worthy cause. We are a failing nation, but on November 5th, we will become a great nation again. Make America great again. So I have talked before about how Donald Trump is constantly mid-negotiation in his public communications with the enemy. People often refer to this as a chess match, move and counter-move. And that's what we're seeing. If Juan Merchan wants to put the gag order in place, then Donald Trump is going to go out there and violate it and challenge him and say, hey, commie, go ahead and put me in prison. Show everyone in the country that you are willing to put the illegitimate president's political opponent in prison in order to shut him up because you and the regime you serve are afraid of what this man has to say. Show the entire country that that is who you are and that that is what you're willing to do. So Trump is calling his bluff. You're going to put this gag order on. I'm going to challenge it, of course, but I'm not only going to challenge its legality and its constitutionality, I'm going to challenge whether or not you have the courage of your convictions and you are willing to enforce this gag order that I am now flagrantly violating. And I've talked about this in principle many times. The regime makes threats. If you don't challenge their threats, then their threats are sufficient to create their desired outcome. If no one challenges the threats, then the regime doesn't even actually have to carry through with their threats. They just have to make the threats, knowing that everyone will simply back down. We saw this in principle with the vaccine mandates at work. People's employers told them that if they did not get vaccinated, they would be fired. A lot of people went ahead and got vaccinated. Some smaller number stood up and their companies went through with it and fired them. And those people may have legal recourse if they want to go that route. Hopefully they do or will in the future. But at this point, a couple years later, they've probably found new employment and are probably pretty happy with their decision, having successfully avoided not only the toxic and experimental COVID shots, but they've also avoided living with the knowledge that they backed down in an important moment. Those were hard decisions at the time that had very negative short-term consequences, but I imagine that most of the people who made that decision do not regret it. And of course, then you've got the people who challenged the decisions made by their employers, and they were able to back their employers down. It turned out that their employers didn't really have the courage of their convictions. They were incentivized in some way to apply a vaccine mandate. And when they were challenged on the legality, on the morality, they backed down because they knew that they were doing something wrong. And every time these systems of power are forced to back down, it makes it more likely that people will stand up. And this matters this year because there is going to be a major effort, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but there's going to be a major effort to silence people online and take away their freedom of speech. You can imagine we'll see something similar to what we saw in 2020. They will have changed their tactics, of course, because the social media landscape looks a lot different than it did in 2020. There's been a lot revealed since 2020 about government influence into censorship and the censorship industrial complex, as it is sometimes referred to, their interplay with the social media platforms. But there will be plenty of signals coming from the regime saying, if you continue to say these things, you're going to be in big trouble. If those threats are enough to silence people and cow them so that they shut up and they stop telling the truth online, concerned about the potential for consequences, then the regime never actually has to bring the enforcement, which means there's nothing to even hold them accountable for. They implied some threats, people backed down because they were scared of any potential consequences, which confirms for the regime once again that all of these sheep will do what they're told whenever they are threatened in any way. So Mershon applies the gag order. Trump flagrantly violates it in full public view of everyone. Will it be enforced? If it is enforced, Trump immediately becomes America's non-communist Nelson Mandela. And if it's not enforced, then the regime is immediately shown to be weak and feckless to everyone, but most particularly to their own strongest supporters who have been begging for Trump to be thrown in prison for 9 years without even being able to describe one crime that he could have possibly committed. And neither do any of these indictments, by the way. They rely on made-up facts, novel legal theories, and pure impossibilities like Joe Biden actually receiving 81 million real lawful American votes and January 6th being an insurrection to overthrow the government by people who were unarmed, with the sitting president leading the insurrection against himself. Reuters covered Trump's statement and the application of this drag order on Sunday, writing, Trump was referring to Justice Juan Mershon, who will preside over his trial in New York State Court in Manhattan on criminal charges of covering up a $130,000 payment before the 2016 election to porn star Stormy Daniels to buy her silence about an alleged sexual encounter. Now, that sexual encounter is denied by both Stormy Daniels and Donald Trump. Stormy Daniels owes Donald Trump somewhere around $600,000, and her former attorney, Michael Avenatti, is now in prison for fraud. Going on, the Republican who is challenging Democrat President Joe Biden in the November 5th U.S. presidential election has pleaded not guilty to 34 counts of falsifying business records and denies an encounter with Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford. Mershon, on April 1st, expanded an existing gag order that had barred Trump from publicly commenting about witnesses and court staff to make clear it also applies to family members. He did so after Trump disparaged Mershon's daughter, Okay, so Trump has disparaged this judge's daughter, according to Reuters. That is very sad, very offensive. No judge in America should ever be at risk of having his daughter disparaged by the president he is attempting to convict of a novel crime, a DA made up at the behest of an illegitimate presidential administration. How could he? This is the New York Post on March 30th. Dem clients of daughter of New York judge in Trump hush money trial raised $93 million off the case. Two major Democratic clients of the daughter of the judge overseeing Donald Trump's hush money trial have raised at least $93 million in campaign donations and used the case in their solicitation emails, raising renewed concerns that the jurist has a major conflict of interest. Trump's attorneys are considering filing another motion demanding Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan recuse himself from the trial set to begin April 15th, sources said. The judge's daughter, Lauren Merchan, is president of Authentic Campaigns, a Chicago-based progressive political consulting firm whose top clients include Representative Adam Schiff, who was the lead prosecutor in Trump's first impeachment trial, and the Senate Majority PAC, a major party fundraiser. Authentic Campaigns, and thus the judge's daughter, is actively making money from this sham attack against President Trump, rendering Judge Merchan conflicted out, that from Trump spokesman Stephen Chung. He went on in that statement, "The judge should do the right thing and immediately recuse himself in order to show the American people that the Democrats have not destroyed our justice system completely. Him continuing to be involved in this crooked Joe Biden-directed witch hunt is a complete violation of applicable rules, regulations, and ethics." The article also notes that Lauren Merchan worked for Vice President Kamala Harris in her 2020 presidential campaign as a Director of Digital Persuasion. Okay, so that was 10 days ago. And since then, the judge has expanded this gag order. Donald Trump is no longer allowed to point out that this judge's daughter is involved in politics and represents members of the deep state, members of this illegitimate uniparty regime that is attempting to imprison Donald Trump for 700 years. And then we have this from yesterday. This is Bloomberg. Trump jurors will be asked about Antifa, QAnon, and Truth Social. Potential jurors at Donald Trump's first criminal trial will be asked whether they belong to fringe groups like Antifa and QAnon, as well as whether they've been to rallies supporting or opposing the former president. Now, QAnon is not a group, and it's not a conspiracy theory. There is Q, an anonymous account on internet message boards, and then there are Anons, anonymous people on the internet. Now, if you ask Jerry Nadler, that portly little man who looks like he must be a cartoon villain, a softer, less threatening version of Danny DeVito's Penguin in the 1990s Batman movie, if you ask him, then Antifa doesn't exist at all either. Except, of course, Antifa does exist, and they have chapters and little groups of Antifa all across the country. And there is organization and funding, and we can see the results of their behavior in the real world. They are the militant arm of Black Lives Matter. But let's go on. Justice Juan Merchan included the questions in a letter Monday to lawyers for Trump and Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who brought the case. The document was released just before an appeals court judge rejected an attempt by Trump to delay the trial over claims that a New York City jury can't be impartial. Bragg alleges Trump falsified dozens of business records to conceal a hush money payment to a porn star before the 2016 election to keep her quiet about an alleged affair. The payoff was part of an alleged scheme to influence the 2016 election by preventing salacious stories about Trump from being published. It really is amazing, isn't it, that the first trial in America's history against a president or former president all stems from a sexual affair that both parties admit never happened. The proposed list hints at how contentious the jury selection process may be when the trial starts April 15th. It could take up to 2 weeks to pick a jury, or about a quarter of the trial. Among other things, potential jurors will also be asked if they use Trump's social media platform, Truth Social, whose parent company has lost billions of dollars in market value since it started trading publicly 2 weeks ago. And yes, that's true if you also understand that it gained billions of dollars first. They'll also be asked if they belong to any anti-Trump groups or if they have any, quote, feelings or opinions about how Mr. Trump is being treated in this case, end quote. Possible jurors will also be asked if they have ever attended a rally or campaign event for Trump, if they have a relative or a close friend who volunteered for his campaign, and if they've ever followed Trump on social media. Panelists will also be asked if they have any strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about whether a former president may be criminally charged in a state court. Just after Mershon released the questionnaire, an appeals court judge rejected Trump's attempt to delay the trial or move it out of Manhattan entirely, citing recent polling and a, quote, quantitative analysis of media coverage that shows a fair and impartial jury cannot be selected. Bragg argued that Trump's survey showed that most of the island's inhabitants are confident they can deliver a verdict based only on the evidence. Earlier Monday, Trump made a last-ditch effort to get Mershon removed from the case over claims that his daughter might profit professionally from the proceeding as an employee of a consulting firm that has Democrats as clients, and that is putting it mildly. Now, there's been a renewed focus in the last couple of weeks on anonymous accounts online and specifically QAnon. We saw multiple QAnon-related headlines last week in advance of the release of a Netflix documentary called The Antisocial Network, Memes to Mayhem. And the Hollywood industry website Variety covered it last week on the 5th. The headline reads, "A Netflix doc smartly tells an internet hate story when 4chan met QAnon." And I'm not going to go through all of this, but let's just hit the beginning and the end. The Antisocial Network, Memes to Mayhem, is a documentary about 4chan, the popular image board website that became the petri dish in which QAnon, the mother of all crackpot conspiracy theories, came into being. The story of 4chan makes for a fascinating chapter in the evolution of internet culture, but chances are we wouldn't be seeing a documentary about it that drops today on Netflix if the 4chan saga hadn't culminated in the arrival of QAnon. And I have to assume that this writer is saying that while understanding that 4chan was blamed in part for the Christchurch massacre in New Zealand, those accusations made in an attempt to take down 4chan, these unrestricted, uncensored internet message boards, have always been very, very dangerous in the eyes of the censors. But let's continue. Given the significance of QAnon, i.e. the fact that half the country now thinks batshit psychotic fantasy scenarios are the essence of reality, you'd think that when the movie arrived at its creation, it would feel like you were entering the last circle of the heart of darkness. Now, that is a very interesting statement to make. Half the country, well, thank you for recognizing, it's actually quite a bit more than half the country who you, commie, would describe that way. But here's the thing. If you want to talk about batshit fantastical conspiracy theories, maybe we should start with the claim that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes, or that little cloth masks could prevent the very deadliest, very deadly pandemic, or that the Nazi battalions trained by the CIA in Ukraine are actually okay because they're being led by a man who is reportedly half Jewish. And I'm talking, of course, about the comedic actor in Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky. But let's go on. The writer says, but no. Ironically, the genesis of QAnon is the lightest and most amusing part of the antisocial network. That's not because QAnon itself has been anything less than disastrous in the wreckage it has caused this country. Of all the things that account for the stubborn popularity of Donald Trump, the fact that so many of his supporters are QAnon heads, believers in the idea that they're fighting a satanic cult of pedophiles who have the support and protection of the Democratic Party, is no minor factor. I wonder why these people never actually engage with those claims and find out whether or not they're true. They just say that everything has been debunked. The author goes on to say conspiracy theory again and again for like the next 1,000 words, calls radio host Hal Turner a neo-Nazi, and then ends this way. The antisocial network is a lively lesson in digital history, one that leaves you with the disquieting feeling that some of the most influential outgrowths of internet culture, like QAnon, were essentially flukes. On the other hand, maybe there was a perverse design to it. The hackers and programmers of 4chan were out for kicks. They wanted eyeballs and would do anything to get them. QAnon brainwashed the nation, but in its way, it was the fulfillment of that dream. It got America addicted to demented conspiracy theory because demented conspiracy theory is more entertaining than reality. So that hit Netflix last week, but that wasn't the only news that Netflix made a week ago. The Daily Mail reported that Facebook let Netflix see user DMs, that's direct messages, to help them tailor content as part of a close collaboration between the two tech giants. New court documents claim that was the headline from a week ago. Facebook's parent company Meta allegedly allowed Netflix to peer at its user DMs for nearly a decade to help the streaming giant better tailor content for its own users, an explosive lawsuit has alleged. Court documents unsealed on March 23rd that were filed last April as part of a major antitrust lawsuit against Meta appear to have exposed the intricate relationship between two of Silicon Valley's biggest players. The class action lawsuit, filed by two U.S. citizens, Maximilian Klein and Sarah Graybert, alleged Netflix and Facebook enjoyed a special relationship, with the social media platform giving the streaming site bespoke access to user data. The two Silicon Valley players also agreed to, quote, custom partnerships and integrations that helped supercharge Facebook's ad targeting and ranking models, end quote, from at least 2011, thanks to the personal relationship between Netflix's co-founder Reed Hastings and Facebook's founder Mark Zuckerberg. Lawyers alleged that within a month of Hastings joining Facebook's board of directors, the two companies signed an inbox API, an application programming interface agreement, that allowed Netflix programmatic access to Facebook's users' private message inboxes. So Facebook gave Netflix access to analyze all the messages that you sent to everyone. And this was supposedly to help Netflix better target which movies it produces, which TV shows it suggests you watch next. Would anyone believe that? And then, of course, it's also worth remembering that Susan Rice, who was Obama's national security advisor in his second term, was appointed to the Netflix board during Donald Trump's first term, then left for the fake Biden White House and has now returned to the Netflix board. So we have Facebook, whose operations are to some extent directed by elements of our government and the State Department. Former intel, former law enforcement in the organizations, Facebook and the other social media companies, with a revolving door for their employees going between government and the tech firms. And they're sharing data with Netflix, Netflix having the same sort of relationship with the government. But let's get back to the world of the anonymous. We talked briefly last week about the Washington Post reporter Philip Bump, kind of a clownish and embarrassing figure, a really low-grade regime propagandist. He wrote an article last Tuesday in the Washington Post, Whatever Happened to QAnon, and he interviewed a man named Will Sommer, who was the Daily Beast's QAnon expert. He was featured in the HBO documentary called Q Into the Storm. These are the sorts of people who will tell you all about what QAnon is, and they'll tell you who Q is, and that it's Ron Watkins, Code Monkey Z. But they'll never actually look at Q posts and attempt to think about what they might mean. It's very strange, but those are the sort of magical skills you acquire by not being a conspiracy theorist. As soon as you understand that you are not a conspiracy theorist, you are the sort of person that accepts the consensus explanation from corporate media, you then know that all of the conspiracy theories out there are definitely wrong and definitely crazy, and you don't have to then look into them because you trust that other people like you have looked into them. That's how everybody knows it's a conspiracy theory. I mean, the only way that could be wrong is if none of the people who are calling it a conspiracy theory actually bothered to look into it. And, I mean, some of them must have, right? Bump wraps up his very important article this way. Summer notes that the movement first emerged when Trump's administration was struggling in late 2017. QAnon presented an alternative picture. I think the reason Q took off was that it offered a different world where Trump was constantly winning and fulfilling his promises, he explained. Also, it gives you that taste of a political campaign, like, oh, we're still waging war on those Democrats, rather than we're debating tax cuts. As one adherent I spoke to in 2018 put it, I view it as hope. Despite all the chaos the country is going through, there is a backbone of what's taking place behind the scenes. Should Trump return to the White House, then he might bring Q with him, figuratively at least. The galaxy of voices who promoted QAnon the first time around still exists. Voices like X22 Report, which has recently hosted figures close to Trump World. There's an army of people who believe that Trump is engaged in a ferocious clandestine battle against an oppressive, powerful cabal of elites who will readily elevate that idea given the opportunity or inclination to do so. Trump would no doubt once again be happy to have their support. So Donald Trump, in order to win a fake election that may or may not happen, he's courting the dangerous conspiracy theorists once again because he desperately needs the far-right fringe conspiracy theorist vote. Now that's how Will Sommer and Philip Bump describe it. But that's weird because the guy reviewing the documentary said it was like half the country. Bump noted that it was tens of thousands of people who then became a big part of Trump rallies. And then after the very violent insurrection, QAnon just disappeared. So it's either tens of thousands of people or it's over half the country. But strangely, they never mention the fact that there are people involved in the truth community all around the world, millions and millions and millions and millions of people in countries all across the world are investigating not only the issues raised in the Q posts, but how those issues intersect the political figures and agendas in their own countries. The awakening that is happening right now is happening worldwide. But you're not going to see people like Philip Bump acknowledging that. They want to make sure that everybody knows this is very, very small. It's an isolated sort of thing. These people's beliefs are crazy. They don't know what they're talking about. They're just in that Trump cult. Now, just a day after Philip Bump reminded everybody of the QAnon threat, and just a couple of days before the QAnon documentary came out, we had this from Wired on the 3rd. U.S. Navy veteran who feds say rammed FBI headquarters had QAnon-linked online presence. Now, this is one of those stories that, at various points in our history, would have been a major incident, especially if it really happened. But now it's just an afternoon news cycle distraction that we will never hear about again. And as we get into this, you might remember an incident in the days following the Mar-a-Lago raid on August 8th of 2022. We had, allegedly, some figure who had just signed up for Truth Social and was a big Trump supporter go and attack an FBI field office in Cincinnati with a nail gun before leading law enforcement authorities on a high-speed chase that ended up, I guess, in him being dead or something. The story went away in 3 hours and no one ever heard of it ever again. But let's get into the story from Wired. A former Navy submarine technician was arrested after law enforcement says he drove an SUV into the FBI headquarters near Atlanta on Monday afternoon. It is still unclear why the suspect, Irvin Lee Bowling, attempted to force entry into the headquarters, but research conducted by the nonpartisan public interest nonprofit Advanced Democracy and shared exclusively with Wired has found that accounts believed to be associated with Bowling shared numerous conspiracy theories on social media platforms, including X and Facebook. All right, now before we get further into this, let's find out a little bit about Advanced Democracy. You can go to influencewatch.org and search Advanced Democracy. The overview. Daniel J. Jones is a former Teach for America alum who joined the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence under then-chair Senator Dianne Feinstein. As an investigator, after completing his master's degree in policy and working for the FBI for 4 years as an investigator, Jones is most famous for his work leading a 7-year investigation into allegations of torture by the U.S. government after 9/11. He published a report in December 2014 that detailed acts of torture committed by the CIA. After leaving the U.S. Senate, Jones founded Advanced Democracy Incorporated in January 2018, 4 days after Jones was identified as a partner of Fusion GPS and its investigation of the Trump-Russia collusion claims. So we have a Russia hoaxer that investigates QAnon, and he's sure that the guy who rammed the FBI gate is QAnon adjacent. His organization has also received money from the Silicon Valley Community Foundation that you can also research on influencewatch.org. And if you do that, you will find that they are associated with countless other left-wing think tanks, nonprofits, and philanthropists. And you will also find this: funding to the Center for Tech and Civic Life. In 2020, the Silicon Valley Community Foundation funneled $328,176,850 to the Center for Technology and Civic Life, a left-leaning Chicago-based nonprofit that redistributed the funds as COVID-19 relief grants to thousands of county and city election offices from Mark Zuckerberg's Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. So this is the CTCL money, the Mark Zuckerberg money, going through the Silicon Valley Community Foundation that was the election rigging fund. In addition, on the Advanced Democracy website, they have a tracking project to track the political donations of the 147 members of Congress who objected to the certification of the fraudulent electors on January 6, 2021. But let's get back to the Wired article on all this QAnon violence. Just after noon on Monday, Bowling rammed his burnt orange SUV, probably Trump orange, with South Carolina license plates into a final barrier at the FBI's Atlanta headquarters, wrote Matthew Upshaw, an FBI agent assigned to the Atlanta office, in a sworn affidavit on Tuesday. Isn't it weird that they're describing an event for which they should have physical and photographic evidence via a witness's affidavit? That is just odd. That's all I'm saying. Upshaw added that after Bowling crashed the SUV, he left the car and tried to follow an FBI employee into the secure parking lot. When agents instructed Bowling to sit on a curb, he refused and tried again to enter the premises. The affidavit also stated that Bowling resisted arrest when agents subsequently tried to detain him. Bowling was charged on Tuesday with destruction of government property, according to court records reviewed by Wired. And this is the sort of thing you'll do if you go down the rabbit hole and start believing in QAnon conspiracy theories. So let's check on the important work that Advanced Democracy is doing. Let's get into some of their research. I'm also amazed, by the way, that they did all this research so quickly. The incident happened, and then immediately Advanced Democracy was able to track this guy and all his accounts down, and now he knows that this is a QAnon adjacent attack against our democracy. Advanced Democracy researchers identified an account on X with the handle Aloha Tiger 11 a reference to the Clemson University mascot, which Bowling has expressed support for on his public Facebook page. Oh, wow. That is just, he's nailed. The handle is similar to usernames on other platforms like Telegram and Cash App, and also bears similarities to a Facebook page with Bowling's name. The profile picture used in the X account also resembles a picture of the same man shown in Bowling's public Facebook profile. The X account is currently set to private, but dozens of its old posts are still publicly viewable through the Internet Archive. Thank goodness someone was backing this random person's posts up the whole time. In December 2020, the X account responded to a post about a federal government stimulus bill that stated, quote, "Wonder what it will take for people to wake up," end quote. You can just hear that post inciting violence. The X account, believed to be associated with Bowling, responded, "I'm awake, just looking for a good militia to join." All right, so 4 years ago, he posted a joke about joining a militia, and he apparently still hasn't joined a militia, but I guess that's sort of scary or something? Around the same time, social media accounts seemingly associated with Bowling repeatedly boosted QAnon content and interacted with QAnon promoters, including by posting a link to a now-deleted QAnon-associated YouTube channel alongside the comment, "Release the Kraken," in direct reference to Sidney Powell's failed legal efforts to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia. Oh my goodness, you mean he didn't believe that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes simply because there's no evidence anywhere that Joe Biden did that and no rational reason why anyone should ever believe he could have? The horror. On what's believed to be Bowling's Facebook account, there were various posts related to anti-vaccine memes as well. Thank goodness for well-funded researchers, or we wouldn't be able to find information like this out. We wouldn't know what ideology to blame for someone supposedly ramming an FBI gate. The accounts also posted in support of former President Donald Trump. In December 2020, "I love you" was posted in response to a post on X from Trump that falsely claimed the election had been rigged by Democrats. I hope they're right about that being a false claim. Courtney Bowling, who is identified as the suspect's wife on Facebook, did not respond to requests for comment via phones or messages sent to her social media profiles. No legal counsel is listed on record for Bowling. It is so far unclear how Bowling came to espouse these beliefs, but far-right groups and extremists have for decades used social media platforms as a way of spreading conspiracies and radicalizing new members. In recent years, there have been numerous examples of far-right groups making online claims or threats that have been quickly followed by real-world violence. And for real, they link to that story from August 2022 about the guy who supposedly tried to attack the FBI field office with a nail gun. But think about what they're doing here. They are taking totally normal beliefs, like the election was stolen, and like the vaccines were not very safe and were not very effective, and expressing that the public would like to see the evidence of voting machine-based election fraud. Claims made years ago, by the way, tying them together, linking them to the very dangerous QAnon, and then suggesting that this incident was instigated by this QAnon ideology. Now, all of this is very silly in our minds. I get it, 100%. And we've all heard all of these stories before. But in some way, that is the point. They are re-upping all these stories. They are bringing all of these stories back to the public consciousness. Why? Because the amorphous QAnon is an avatar for their hate movement. Anything that is bad can be linked to QAnon. Therefore, QAnon is responsible for everything bad. Once you've convinced people of that, all you have to do is tie any belief that you want to make dangerous to QAnon in some way. Usually all they have to do is call it a conspiracy theory. What about vaccine opposition has to do with QAnon? Well, nothing. It's just suggestive of a person that might be open to believing in these dangerous conspiracy theories. So you lump them all together, and then anything else that comes out, that can be lumped in too. And think about how they treated the quote-unquote big lie after the 2020 election. It became the very dangerous conspiracy theory, so dangerous that it caused the very violent insurrection. And to shut everybody up, to make people stop saying the big lie, they would simply remind the public that that claim is what led to the greatest violent act against our democracy since the Civil War. They attacked the citadel of our democracy. And because we can never have anything like that happen again, we need to be able to silence or prosecute anyone who's telling the big lie. You see, they have to attach violent acts to all of these things. There has to be a real-world negative consequence that no moral person could support. Otherwise, you're just trying to censor and prosecute people in defense of some imaginary victim's feelings. But let's say they're not going to be able to censor or prosecute people. Well, what is the next best thing? The next best thing is to remove the wall of anonymity, to make sure that every person has to say the things they're going to say behind their real life identity. And this has been a cause that even people like Jordan Peterson have supported. This is the Associated Press from Saturday, April 6th. Anonymous users are dominating right-wing discussions online. They also spread false information. The reposts and expressions of shock from public figures followed quickly after a user on the social platform X, who uses a pseudonym, claimed that a government website had revealed quote-unquote skyrocketing rates of voters registering without a photo ID in three states this year, two of them crucial to the presidential contest. Extremely concerning, ex-owner Elon Musk replied twice to the post this past week. Are migrants registering to vote using social security numbers? Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, an ally of former President Donald Trump, asked on Instagram. Trump himself posted to his own social platform within hours to ask, who are all those voters registering without a photo ID in Texas, Pennsylvania, and Arizona? What is going on? State election officials soon found themselves forced to respond. They said the user, who pledges to fight, expose, and mock wokeness, was wrong and had distorted Social Security Administration data. Actual voter registrations during the time period cited were much lower than the numbers being shared online. Stephen Richer, the recorder in Maricopa County, Arizona, which includes Phoenix, refuted the claim in multiple X posts, while Jane Nelson, the Secretary of State in Texas, issued a statement calling it totally inaccurate. And absolutely, we should trust the election officials, even if they're people whose job it is to rig and steal elections, like Stephen Richer. Yet by the time they tried to correct the record, the false claim had been spread widely. In 3 days, the pseudonymous user's claim amassed more than 63 million views on X,
formerly Twitter,
according to the platform's metrics. A thorough explanation from Richer attracted a fraction of that, reaching 2.4 million viewers. The incident sheds light on how social media accounts that shield the identities of the people or groups behind them through clever slogans and cartoon avatars have come to dominate right-wing political discussions online, even as they spread false information. Okay, let's pause for a second. I don't understand what factor the anonymity of this account has in this situation. The claim is either true or false. It has been claimed false by people who we have absolutely no reason to believe. Our knowledge of who these people are and their histories is what leads us to disregard their claims. But with anonymous accounts, we don't have the mainstream media saying, trust this expert, just a ridiculous appeal to authority. We actually have to go and verify that information for ourselves. Now, some people don't do that, and that's not a great habit to get into. But many anonymous accounts take what they're doing very seriously, and they vet that information themselves before they share it. Considering Stephen Richer can and should not be trusted at all, Any random anonymous account you might choose to trust online carries better odds. There's no reason to believe that this claim wouldn't or couldn't have been made by someone who has their full name and picture on their account. The anonymous factor has virtually nothing to do with this. Elon Musk shared the post. Marjorie Taylor Greene shared the post. Donald Trump questioned, "Hey, is this true?" The accounts enjoy massive reach that is boosted by engagement algorithms, by social media companies greatly reducing or eliminating efforts to remove phony or harmful material, and by endorsements from high-profile figures such as Musk. They can also generate substantial financial rewards from X, formerly Twitter, and other platforms by ginning up outrage against Democrats. Oh, the victimhood. I was under the impression that the Associated Press was an objective newswire service. They were just straight down the middle. And then I looked at the bottom after the end of this article, and it says the Associated Press receives support from several private foundations to enhance its explanatory coverage of elections and democracy. And then they give a link and say, see more about AP's Democracy Initiative here. And if you click that link, it'll take you to a 2022 article that says the effort supported by Lilly Endowment Incorporated, Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and Charles Stewart Mott Foundation is focused on providing solutions-based journalism rather than merely highlighting problems and extreme voices. So the Associated Press is being supported by globalist philanthropies. They are making the case against online anonymity, and they are expressing anger that people who are quote-unquote ginning up outrage against Democrats are able to monetize that on X, formerly Twitter, as if people who are ginning up outrage against Republicans and MAGA and QAnon and conspiracy theorists and anti-vaxxers and all the rest of it haven't had the red carpet rolled out in front of them for the last nearly 9 years now since Donald Trump came down the escalator. There are massive incentives for anyone who is willing to go out there and be an effective anti-Trump influencer. And what more proof do you need than the fact that the Associated Press is now being funded by philanthropists to pitch their anti-Trump line? But let's keep going. Many such internet personalities identify as patriotic citizen journalists uncovering real corruption. Yet their demonstrated ability to spread misinformation unchecked while disguising their true motives worries experts in the United States in a presidential election year. And let's pause for a moment to check in with a post from a friend of mine who happens to be an Anon. I don't know who this person actually is in real life. I just know that they have a consistent record of providing interesting insights into the information war. This is my friend who goes by online, Patriots in Control. He put together a little photo collage of AP headlines and fact checks that upon reading them might leave you with the impression that the Associated Press is spreading misinformation on a massive scale while hiding their true motives, which are obviously in alignment with globalist philanthropists. He lays out like 15 of these headlines, but let's just go through a couple. Report: Trump disparaged U.S. war dead as losers and suckers. Totally false and unsubstantiated. Studies support the use of face masks in limiting spread of COVID-19. Is that correct? Obviously not. COVID vaccine found highly effective in real-world U.S. study. Now, I have no doubt they were reporting about a real study. That real study just happened to be wrong. COVID shots more protective than past infection, study shows. Same thing, but still with a motivation to sell vaccines and misinform the public. AP fact check: Trump falsely claims vindication on collusion. AP fact check: Trump, Putin, on no collusion economy myths. Headline: In video, Trump recycles unsubstantiated voter fraud claims. AP fact check. Trump sticks to election falsehoods on January 6th, and you could find thousands of these. But back to the AP. They are exploiting a long history of trust in American whistleblowers and anonymous sources, said Samuel Woolley, director of the Propaganda Research Lab at the University of Texas at Austin. Oh, a university lab researching propaganda? Are they trying to figure out how to make theirs more effective? Or are they just studying censorship methods? Two sides of the same regime fiat coin. With these type of accounts, there's an allure of covertness. There's this idea that they somehow might know something that other people don't. They're co-opting the language of genuine whistleblowing or democratically inclined leaking. In fact, what they're doing is antithetical to democracy. Oh, thanks, Professor. The claim that spread online this past week misused Social Security Administration data tracking routine requests made by states to verify the identity of individuals who registered to vote using the last four digits of their Social Security number. These requests are often made multiple times for the same individual, meaning they do not necessarily correspond one-to-one with people registering to vote. Wow, that seems thoroughly debunked. The larger implication is that the cited data represents people who entered the U.S. illegally and are supposedly registering to vote with the Social Security numbers they received for work authorization documents. But only U.S. citizens are allowed to vote in federal elections, and illegal voting by those who are not is exceedingly rare because the states have processes to prevent it. So because the states have processes to prevent illegals from voting, it doesn't happen. That is what we are being told by the Associated Press. They have not found evidence of it happening, at least. Now, why haven't they found evidence of something like that? Oh, yeah, it's because nobody's ever allowed to check. But you see, they admit that illegal aliens get Social Security numbers, and no one would deny that illegal aliens can go get driver's licenses, and no one can deny that certain states have automatic voter registration at the DMV. So it's just a matter of obvious fact that illegal aliens can be registered to vote. And while they might not go vote themselves, either in person or through the mail, they can, as registered voters, be sent ballots, which can then be collected and then voted on their behalf. There is absolutely no reason to believe this doesn't happen. In fact, the system was set up to allow this to happen. And the history of illegal aliens voting in our elections on a massive scale goes back 20 years. But we are supposed to assume, from their convoluted explanation and from the fact that there are processes to prevent illegal aliens from voting, that all of this has now been thoroughly debunked. It is the stuff of conspiracy theory, and anon accounts should be unmasked to avoid anyone ever hearing claims like this ever again. Back to the article. Accounts that do not disclose the identities of those behind them have thrived online for years, gaining followers for their content on politics, humor, human rights, and more. People have used anonymity on social media to avoid persecution by repressive authorities or to speak freely about sensitive experiences. Many left-wing protesters adopted anonymous online identities during the Occupy Wall Street movement of the early 2010s. The meteoric rise of a group of right-wing pseudonymous influencers who act as alternative information sources has been more recent. It's coincided with a decline in public trust in government and media through the 2020 presidential election and the COVID-19 pandemic. Oh, yeah, and AP, also through that period where you were publishing all those headlines and fact checks that turned out not to be true at all. These influencers frequently spread misinformation and otherwise misleading content, often in service of the same recurring narratives, such as alleged voter fraud, the woke agenda, or Democrats supposedly encouraging a surge of people through illegal immigration to steal elections or replace whites. They often use similar content and reshare each other's posts. This is obviously just normal social media behavior. There is rampant, widespread theft of our elections. It has been ongoing for years. The woke agenda is quite real, as is replacement theory. The account that posted the recent misinformation has also spread bogus information about the Israel-Hamas war, sharing a post last fall that falsely claimed to show a Palestinian crisis actor pretending to be seriously injured. And everybody knows that crisis actors are a conspiracy theory. That could never happen. Since his takeover of Twitter in 2022, Musk has nurtured the rise of these accounts, frequently commenting on their posts and sharing their content. He has also protected their anonymity. In March, X, formerly Twitter, updated its privacy policy to ban people from exposing the identity of an anonymous user. Musk also rewards high engagement with financial payouts. The ex-user who spread false information about new voter registrants has racked up more than 2.4 million followers since joining the platform in 2022. The user, in a post last July, reported earning more than $10,000 from X's new Creator Ad Revenue program. X did not respond to a request for comment, which was met with an automated reply. Tech Watchdog said that while it's critical to maintain spaces for anonymous voices online, they shouldn't be allowed to spread lies without accountability. Companies must vigorously enforce terms of service and content policies that promote election integrity and information integrity generally, said Kate Ruan, director of the Free Expression Project at the Center for Democracy and Technology. And let's just pause momentarily for a brief trip over to InfluenceWatch.org. The Center for Democracy and Technology is a center-left nonprofit founded in 1994 that advocates for internet privacy, net neutrality regulations, and transferring governance of internet domain names away from the United States to an international body, among other issues. Its largest donors include major technology conglomerates, including Amazon, Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, and TikTok. Left-of-center foundations, including George Soros's Foundation to Promote Open Society, the Ford Foundation, and the MacArthur Foundation, have also contributed to CDT. Okay, so their representative wants the platforms to enforce their terms of service and their content policies to promote election integrity and information integrity. And that is a roundabout way of saying censorship. The success of these accounts shows how financially savvy users have deployed the online trolling playbook to their advantage, said Dale Barron, a lecturer at Morgan State University and the author of It Came From Something Awful, How a Toxic Troll Army Accidentally Memed Donald Trump into Office. Man, I feel sorry for this guy. The art of trolling is to get the other person enraged, he said. And now we know getting someone enraged really fuels engagement and gives you followers, and so will get you paid. So now it's a sort of business. Ah, yes, saying all the no-no words is such big business. Some pseudonymous accounts on X have used their brands to build loyal audiences on other platforms, from Instagram to the video sharing platform Rumble and the encrypted messaging platform Telegram. The accounts themselves and many of their followers publicly promote their pride in America and its founding documents. It's concerning that many Americans place their trust in these shadowy online sources without thinking critically about who is behind them or how they may want to harm the country, said Kara Alamo, a communications professor at Farley Dickinson University, who has written about toxicity on social media. We know that foreign governments, including China and Russia, are actively creating social media accounts designed to sow domestic discord because they think weakening our social fabric gives their countries a competitive advantage, she said, and they're right. So all of these people who identify as patriotic and believe they are telling the truth on behalf of a better and stronger America to come, they're just mistaken about all that. The people actually looking to protect America and its values are the ones who are willing to violate American values and the rights of each and every one of the American people. If you are not willing to violate every American value and potentially imprison anyone who disagrees with the global regime's agenda, you are not a patriot. Now, yesterday we talked a little bit about how elections are ultimately a battle of narratives. If the votes don't count, if we aren't sure that the results of the elections are reported accurately and that those reported results reflect the will and intent of the American voter, if our elections do not have legitimacy, then all they ever are is a battle of narratives. But also, if the elections do have legitimacy, then the winner would be dictated based on votes, and those votes would be based on the winner of the battle of narratives, whose case, whose positions, whose agenda, whose personality was able to convince the most people. That is a battle of narratives. And that's what's happening now as well. They need to provide a justification for the censorship that they plan to do in the future. So they have to win a battle of narratives over whether or not censorship is appropriate. In 2020, they were able to convince a whole lot of people that there were a bunch of issues that were so important and so contentious that certain viewpoints had to be completely removed from the public conversation. Our country was racist, and so anything that BLM Antifa domestic terrorists did on the streets of our cities was fully justified. We had a very deadly pandemic among us, so they could destroy people's livelihoods, keep children out of school, force people to engage in medical procedures just because the pandemic was so dangerous and so deadly. If you didn't obey, you were killing someone's grandma. You weren't allowed to have any objections to mail-in ballots or any of the other various ways they were changing election rules and laws and processes in the lead up to the 2020 election. You weren't allowed to object to the reported results or the fact that they stopped counting in the middle of the night. You were a conspiracy theorist. That was dangerous. You might end up responsible for instigating a very violent insurrection. And the list went on and on. And people had never really worked their way through most of these issues before. They believed the mainstream media about the facts underlying all of these various issues, and they'd never really thought about censorship. Most people have kind of a default position that censorship is bad. They respect our First Amendment. They think free speech is very important, but they haven't thought it through. And then if you say to them, well, what about hate speech? Most of them will be like, okay, well, you know, hate speech is different. And they've immediately backed down from the free speech position. And you can continue that line of questioning and back them off the position entirely, ending up with them telling you some version of, well, sure, I believe that platforms should be removing mis- and disinformation. It's just so dangerous out there if we get Donald Trump again, or whatever their pet issue is. And they will all of a sudden be arguing for censorship. Sadly, a lot of that still remains today, but it's not like it was in 2020. It's not close to how it was in 2020. I'm not saying that they're not setting up a censorship apparatus that can be equally effective. I am not suggesting that they are not pumping propaganda out at full blast. I am only saying that the American public does not have the same appetite for this stuff they had in 2020. And a big part of that is because they don't think that Donald Trump is the danger anymore. There were all sorts of people who didn't pay attention to news and politics or public events, who in the last 4 years have been totally activated into that mindset. And they are now very connected, concerned with how these politics actually affect their life, their family, their friends. And those people understand that they've been lied to in very serious ways, most particularly about Donald Trump and his supporters. Donald Trump isn't the danger, and he can't be the danger while he is the target of political prosecutions that deny him his basic rights. So if the regime wants to censor the American people, they are going to have to figure out better justifications because they have to win the narrative battle over censorship to be able to do it. Otherwise, it'll backfire like everything else they do. It will further expose them as exactly that global regime they always have been. They are seeding those justifications right now. Then they will begin with the threats. People will hear about censorship or accounts being banned or people being debanked, and they hope some isolated incidents and some widespread threats will cause everyone to back down. But will it work? That is the question. And that could be one of the most important questions of this year. In the face of threats, will the awakened American people actually stand up and tell the truth? And most importantly, will they tell the truth about the 2020 election? If you don't stand up and call their bluff, then the threat alone is effective. And that job makes their lives easy and ensures that they will never face accountability. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/imyourmoderator. And I'll see you soon, out on the range.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/imyourmoderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'm Your Moderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's hell!